Before we get started, I'd just like to thank everyone who participated in our giveaway for the Sea to Seal episode about Royal Hawaiian Sandalwood. I'm so happy that Wade's story and the story of Haloa Aina was met with such positivity and love. The response to the episode was so overwhelming that as a thank you to our incredible audience, we chose 5 more lucky commenters to receive Sandalwood Moisture Cream, another one of our favorite products made with Royal Hawaiian Sandalwood. All of our winners have been contacted, and their goodies are in the mail. Thank you for continuing to listen to Drop of Inspiration, and don't forget to subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast platform. Now, let's get on with the show. On today's episode, we're lucky to sit in on a conversation between two friends. Chief Sales Officer Ben Riley again steps in as guest host to chat with our dynamite guest, Jen Jordan. I never met Jen before the interview, but I feel really lucky that I have now. Jen is one of those people that you encounter and you feel like you've known her all along. In fact, before I met her, I was already benefiting from her friendship without knowing it. It's no secret that we love snacks in our department, so leading up to the interview, I was gorging myself on these chocolates in her office. It turns out they were from Jen. So thanks for the chocolates, Jen. I don't think anyone in the office loved them as much as I did. For those of you who haven't yet been acquainted with the powerhouse that is Jen Jordan, she is one of our Royal Crown Diamonds who currently lives in Kentucky with her husband, Adaryl, and their kiddos. Ben and Jen have been pals for some time now, and I think you'll enjoy hearing that in their conversation as they talk about everything from work life to family life to basketball rivalries. Here's Ben and Jen.
I think where we want to start is you. So tell us kind of about how you grew up. I find as I get to know you, you're full of surprises.
Sure. I grew up in El Paso, Texas. My parents both worked. My sister and I were the only children, and I really wanted to go into medicine since I can remember. I just wanted to be part of that world that kind of was normal for us. And so I planned on going to college to get a pre-med science degree, and that all kind of changed right in the middle of that. But yeah, just had a pretty good, normal American upper middle class childhood.
And I've seen pictures of crimped hair,
yes,
and cheer skirts.
That,
right?
Definitely, so happened.
You
for
did
sure.
That in high school. Other hobbies. What were the things that you liked?
You know, I wasn't real into sports, like as far as team sports, but I did. Like, I grew up on a swim team. I did competitive gymnastics. In high school, I did the cheerleading thing. I did sports medicine, that kind of thing. Not like basketball or anything like that. But
you're much more of a sports follower today.
Definitely.
Like, you're definitely one of the sportier people I know, which
for
I love because
sure.
I'm sporty in my own way. So I like
I
to
do
talk.
Love to watch sports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. And it sounds like you were always pretty active and also fairly studious. So school was important to you.
Definitely. Like, super nerd. Always, like, making all A's was high priority for me. And if I, you know, made a B, it was like the end of the world, devastation. Very much that perfectionistic type kid that, you know, always wanted to perform well, always wanted to do things the right way, didn't want to let anyone down.
Kind of a model child in many ways.
I mean,
I'm sure.
I was a good kid for
yeah.
sure.
And then, of course, you graduated from high school and became a Red Raider, so went to Texas
yep,
Tech.
Yep, went right? to Texas Tech.
Talk to us about that, about your experience there. And obviously, you already kind of mentioned a little bit about your journey on your educational track.
Right. So I was, you know, took calculus my freshman year, organic chemistry, like was just super on that path to taking the MCAT and getting into medical school. And about halfway through my junior year at Tech, I was working for 2 sets of doctors, and kind of for the first time as like a semi-adult, you know, 20, 21-year-old, realized what that life would look like and realized that's not what I wanted my life to look like. It was a really big deal. I remember calling my mom and just crying and saying, I'm not supposed to go to medical school. Like, I don't even know what else there is. because this is all I've ever said that I want to do. And I remember thinking my dad's going to be so disappointed, you know, and I remember calling him and telling him and him being like, okay, well, you know, what do you want to do? And realizing that the expectations that I put on myself were really different than the external expectations from other people that I assumed were there but really weren't. And so that was kind of a good growing learning experience for me. I changed my degree that December to Human Development Family Studies. And then I moved on to graduate school to get a marriage and family counseling degree, still very much thinking I'm going to work in a hospital. Like I'm going to work in the medical world, maybe counseling parents or kids, you know, terminally ill, that kind of thing. Very much drawn to that and still thinking that that was where I was going to end up.
So it sounds like you really had a heart to help, but wanted to do it in a way that also aligned with your kind of your values and your priorities.
Right. I knew someday, I hadn't met my husband at that point, but I knew that someday I would want to get married and that I would want to have kids. And like the cry of my heart was to be home with my kids. And so absolutely no judgment on, you know, moms that want to work, but that was just the desire of my heart was when I have kids, I want to be home with them. And I knew like you can't finance medical school and then quit your job and be home with your kids. And so it just didn't, there was no way to, for those two things to coexist.
I mean, in retrospect now, looking at it, and of course, with the benefit of hindsight and where you are today, what a blessing that you realized that at that time, because you could have continued down that track for, well, really all the way to graduating with your degree and mm-hmm. all of those other, you know, mm-hmm. Aspects and challenges to graduating with a doctor's degree, you know, mm-hmm. medical doctor's degree. And to have realized that earlier, I think, is probably a real blessing and has shaped a lot of the things that have happened since that time.
For sure. And I think just going through that process of letting it go was just a huge personal growth thing for me. And, you know, really digging into, like, what else is out there? What else could I do? And, you know, then pursuing that degree and then actually not even doing what I thought I was going to do with that degree. So I think for me, I tend to marry ideas. You know, once I have a plan, like I'm married to the plan, and even if a train is coming, I'm like, no, this is the plan. We have to make it work. And so that was a good just learning experience of like you can have a plan and you can tweak and change it and fine tune it. You can completely abandon the plan and make a new one. And so that's been good for me.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do, honestly. Mm-hmm. I know for me it's also a very difficult thing to have an idea of what the future is going to look like and then make a decision that dramatically alters that
right.
that direction. And it was obviously at Texas Tech that you also met your husband.
Right. So, I met Adaryl in my last few weeks at Texas Tech, and we ended up dating long distance for several months.
With your graduate degree or your undergrad?
Undergraduate. My graduate degree was from New Orleans.
Okay.
So Adaryl and I ended up in New Orleans together after our first year of graduate school, got married, and within about a year and a half of that, got pregnant, expecting our oldest, who is now 16. And that just changed everything. That completely changed everything. You know, having a baby and, you know, I mean, you're about to have a baby. You know this. Like,
yeah. It's been a while for me since I had my last child. Yeah. And, of course, this one coming. But
right.
It's always an adventure.
Yeah.
And definitely life-changing, you realize,
for
especially
sure.
for mothers.
For sure. And just really, that was when Adaryl was finishing his program. And so we moved to Indiana from New Orleans, and he had his first full-time ministry position at a church. And it was kind of at that point that we were like, whatever it takes, we'll do whatever it takes for, you know, to make it work for me to be home with this baby. And if that means living in a one-bedroom apartment, if that means one car, if that means no cell phones, no cable TV, we did all that. We did all that for years because it was just important for me to be home. And so 4 years later, we had our daughter, Elena, also born in Indianapolis, and then ended up having a pretty significant transition and moved from Indianapolis to Austin. He took a job at a church in Austin, and we were in Austin for about 2 years, a little less than 2 years. And during that position, that was around 2008, recession, big financial issues with churches, especially not-for-profits. And so they went through a round of layoffs and eliminated a significant part of their staff. And so that affected our family. And again, like huge, huge growing time for us of realizing like what's important, what do we value, you know, what's the center of what we do and who we are. And from there, Daryl got a job at a church in Kentucky, which is how we ended up in Lexington. And so we've been in Lexington now for 8 years, and our third surprise baby was born 6 years ago in Kentucky.
So talk me through, did you ever go think back? So you get married, have some children, find yourself obviously focusing on the kids, and Daryl chose obviously a very values-based and not compensation-based career.
For
right?
sure.
And so we've talked about this before, how things were really tight, and, and you had to really, you know, kind of find all the pennies and pinch them and stretch them as far as you could.
Right.
Did you ever look back on, what if I would have gone to medical school, or should I? Because I feel like that's an easy thing to do in the moments of tribulation or challenges where things were really tight and really hard. Did you ever think back and say, I wish I would have, or question your decisions earlier on?
From a financial motivation, no. Because we just chose to be content. We just decided this is what our lot is. This is what God has for us, and we're going to make it work, you know? And these are the decisions that we're making based on that. From still a desire to help people and do something bigger and make an impact, I did often think, like, when the kids are grown, maybe I'll go to medical school. You know, when I'm done with this, I still, like, want something more.
So you're very bright. So obviously you could have done medical school. But it seems like in your life you've made a lot of values-driven decisions. How do you do that? So how do you live a values-driven life? Because I think you're a great example of it.
I don't know how you don't. Honestly, like, I feel like everything that I do is relationship-driven. It's trust-driven. It's values-driven. I feel like making information decisions versus value decisions would make me feel really insecure.
How did living where resources were tight and money was not the, what's the best way to say this, where having a lot of money was not the primary objective, but how did living that way, how has that shaped your life and what have you learned through that?
Yeah, I think that's shaped me a lot, and even now, I still think of purchases in terms of like former paychecks. So I'll think like, wow, that's 2 weeks church pay, or that's 6 months of church pay, you know? And honestly, like, I hope I don't ever lose that. I do value and appreciate that experience and not taking what we have now for granted. And also, like, relating to the normal person, because the normal American is living paycheck to paycheck and is up to their eyeballs in debt. And that was us. And I don't ever want to sit across the table from someone and show them a premium starter kit and tell them it's $160 and them say, I don't have $160, and dismiss that. Like, I don't ever want to look at them and say, yeah, you do. You have that. You have it somewhere. You can eliminate your Starbucks budget, or because we didn't have a Starbucks budget. Like, we legit didn't have $160 laying around. So, yeah, I just think it's important to kind of stay grounded in that.
And I can say I really admire and love the way you and Daryl approach your abundance and your success and the way you do use that. Mm-hmm. And that's a theme hopefully we can kind of come back to after we talk a little bit more about your business experience. Mm-hmm. But I just love the example that you provide to others in our business of what really matters, because I feel like the success in our company can become a curse if it's not managed the right way. And when I see some of our most successful people managing it in a way that shows an example, it makes me feel just better about what we do in general, because mm-hmm. it can be such a blessing, mm-hmm. but it can also, money is, as I'm sure we see it all the time, can become also a major hurdle and a major problem for families, children.
I definitely feel like as we rose into leadership and the paychecks grew, it's not something I even talk about now. I don't talk about my paycheck. We don't flaunt our money, but I definitely felt almost like it was a secret. You know, coming from ministry and having nothing, and my husband's still working at the church at that time, and we were making six figures with Young Living. It was something that I felt like we needed to hide because I wasn't sure what people would think about us with money, you know? And it definitely was something I had to overcome as far as, again, like just being in my head and the expectations that people have that aren't real, but I think they are. And thinking through, what will people think if we have all this money, and will they think we're less spiritual, or will they think we're materialistic, or that we're, you know, we've fallen off the deep end and gone new age, and like, what will they think? And so I remember there came a point, like, we just didn't talk about the money that we made, and we tithed. And I remember thinking, like, what do they think we're doing? Where do you think they think this money's coming from? Because it just was not a thing that we talked about.
Yeah, and I'm sure, again, as you said, fairly dramatic. And I'd like to maybe transition a little bit more now towards your Young Living career. So you're kind of living paycheck to paycheck on mm-hmm. a minister's salary, mm-hmm. And you're in Lexington, right? Mm-hmm.
So for those listening who don't know, my sister April Pointer is who introduced me to Young Living and Essential Oils, and she also is a Royal Crown Diamond. And so she was way more naturally minded than me from the beginning. Like, she did a nutrition degree, you know, has just always been more hippie than me. And when we lived in Austin for that 2 years, we got a lot closer with my sister and brother-in-law because they lived in Dallas. And so we saw them often. And so it was kind of the first time, like, as adults, that we established a friendship between sisters. And I remember her coming to Austin, and she was like, had experimented with lots of different essential oils. And she was actually buying oils from some lady who was distilling them in her basement. And these bottles had like an Avery printer label on them with a cute little font, you know, lavender and purple or whatever. And she was sharing with me, you know, you've got to start trying this. You've got to start using these essential oils. And I was like, we called her the voodoo witch doctor. We called her the crazy oil lady. We called the Aria diffuser her cauldron. I mean, we made so much fun of her. And so over a couple of years, she just would mail me bottles of oils. And the first little while, they were these like homemade printer labels, but then she transitioned to Young Living. And so then she started sending me, you know, legit labeled bottles, which was better. I still completely dismissed it and really just felt like, if this is real, like, every doctor in America would be using it. And I didn't understand the economical part of that. I didn't understand the world and the way that the FDA works and the way that, you know, drugs are approved and the cost of that, and that you can't patent nature. And so I completely dismissed the legitimacy of therapeutic grade natural anything, because I just thought if it was real, everyone would be doing it. So every, you know, few weeks I would get a little package in the mail from my sister with a bottle of this or that and a little note. And I would politely put it in a box that lived on a shelf in my closet. And she'd occasionally call me and be like, are you using that lemon oil? And I'd be like, yeah, I love it.
All the time. And she'd be like, did you have a cauldron?
No.
You didn't.
But she was like, how do you never run out? And I'm like, I don't know. It's like the loaves and the fishes. Like, you know, I don't know. It's one drop at a time. And I just, it was really funny that I was such a non-confrontational person. I didn't even want to tell her what I really thought, you know? And so I just kind of lived in a box in my closet. And so then around 2011, we got pregnant with our youngest. Like I said before, big surprise. And I had some real specific health goals when I was pregnant that I had incurred with my first two pregnancies. I knew this was coming, and was pretty fear driven in my decision about how to handle that. And so was in bed rest and got my very first smartphone for my birthday. So then I realized, you know, I'm a biochemistry nerd in bed with Google, and I should start researching. And so I did, and I started reading about, you know, university level, like legitimate science, good science research about plant-based wellness and essential oils. And my husband would come home from work and I'd be like, you're not going to believe what I read today. He's like, who are you? And so we made a plan. You know, we looked at some resources that my sister had sent me over the years. We talked with her. We pulled down that box and lo and behold, like almost everything that we needed was in the box. My OBGYN that I had at the time was very hippie, like very natural minded. She probably should have been a midwife. And so I just took her research and oils and said, what do you think? And she's like, let's do it. And we, you know, we started to just address specific health goals and supporting my body to do what it needed to do to grow a baby. And it was pretty life changing to experience that and have the peace of mind of knowing that what we were doing was healthy. And so we started just replacing our first line thought of anything we faced with something natural. And it was a whole mind shift. It was really like a reprogramming of the way that we thought about our bodies. And so we started using oils on my daughter. When my son was born, we started using oils on him right away. And it was kind of like, for me, I couldn't just like jump out into the middle of the ocean. I had to tiptoe, you know, but pretty quickly I found myself out in the middle and realized like, this is our life now. This is our normal way of life. I do tell people that we were closet oilers. Like we definitely did not talk about it. I actually had told my sister, she kept wanting me to teach classes. And she was like, you know, think about all the people you could help. Think about this information that you've learned that you could share and the lives that you could change. And I said, listen, I only know two people hippie enough to be interested in using essential oils. And I told her the names of those two people.
And one of them was her.
No, but like legitimately thought nobody I know would be interested in this. This is so crazy. And I don't know how many months later, several months later, a pretty well-known retired lady in our community. So Lexington's kind of small town, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody. And this pretty well-known lady posted on Facebook that she really wanted to learn about essential oils. And did anyone know anyone who she could learn from? And like four of my best friends tagged me in the comments. They knew because they were in our house and they saw little bottles and they smelled us and we talked about it. But they tagged me and said, you should talk to Jen Jordan. Jen Jordan uses oils. And I remember, you know, logging onto Facebook and seeing you have a notification. You've been tagged in a comment and clicking that and then reading what it was and being like, oh no, everybody knows.
I've been outed.
Yes. It was like, I was mortified. Honestly, I was like, what are people going to say? Are they going to call me the voodoo witch doctor? You know, are they going to say the things that I said about my sister? And by the end of the week, I had about a dozen messages in my inbox saying, I want to learn too. You know, have you read anything about this? Do you know if there's research about that? And I was shocked. The people who messaged me, I was shocked that those were the people who were looking for something natural, you know? And so I called my sister, fine, I'll teach a class, send me a script. She sent me a script that just basically covered what are essential oils, how are they made, how do we use them, which ones do we use. And I had these people over to my dining room. We sat around my dining room table. I read the script. The oils I passed around were not even the oils in the starter kit. Like, I passed around respiratory oils because that's what we were using at the time, you know. And that doesn't apply to everyone. Not everyone needs respiratory oils. But every single person at that class was like, how do I buy these? How do I get a membership? And then I was like, wow, this is easy. You know, people are actually in the market for something alternative to what Americans typically do.
Was it hard to admit that your sister was right?
That was so, it's still so hard. You know, anytime I speak and I get to this point, I have to say, my sister was right. Oftentimes we're on a stage together and she's like super big smile, smirky face, you know, pat herself on the back. But yeah, she was right. And she's been right about a lot of things.
Yeah. Can you talk then about, so you taught a class, you were surprised at how easy it was and how much interest there was. And also that people were they didn't think you were a voodoo doctor, but they actually were really interested in essential oils and how they worked. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about where you went from there?
So it quickly became like Jen Jordan uses essential oils, and if you have questions about oils, ask Jen Jordan. And we were part of a really, really big church, so about 10% of our city attended one or another campus at this church. My husband was pretty prominent in the church, like pretty visible, was on the stage occasionally, and so people knew our family. And so I got to a point, I remember thinking, this is so weird, like complete strangers would call me and say, hey, I got your name from so-and-so, I've got questions about essential oils. Or someone would stop me at church in the hall on the way out and say, hey, you know, do you know if there's an oil for this? And so I just started answering questions, right? Because I'm like, this is exciting. Like, I'm learning all this information and I want to share it with people and empower people. And I did that for a while. And then I realized, like, nothing's happening with this. And my sister asked me at that point to help write a training for Young Living leaders. And so I didn't really want to, but I felt like I owed it to her. And so I started listening to trainings in order to be able to create something of value, right? And I remember listening to this training where this lady said, when people ask you a question about your product, don't answer them. Set an appointment to answer them. So when you're walking out of church or you're in the grocery store checkout line and somebody stops you and asks, you know, do you know if there's an oil for this, or do you know anything about this oil? And I would just spout off the answer. Like, I wasn't actually empowering them. They weren't ready to listen in that moment. They weren't really listening. And it was rushed. And there was no action step of, and here's how you get it. You know, and so I shifted the way that I handled that. And I started setting appointments with people. And so a stranger would call and say, hey, do you know if there's an oil for this? And I'd be like, why don't you come over to my house this week, Tuesday, 7 o'clock. Here's my address. And they would come over and we would sit at my kitchen table and I would pull out resources and we would like really actually take time to answer their question and say, here's what you need to do. Because saying, yeah, peppermint would be great for that doesn't help them. Like, I need to show them peppermint would be great for that. And here's how you buy peppermint. You know, actually get it in their hands, because that's what changes their life. And that completely shifted everything I was doing from like something that I was developing this passion for to an actual business.
It's funny how life doesn't always unfold the way we think it will. Mm-hmm. And that you had the faith to follow your heart and your values to a place that ended up exactly where you were meant to be, mm-hmm. I think is really quite
inspiring. It's really like the culmination of who I am and literally 42 years in the making. You know, just my education, my passion, my upbringing, my experiences, my faith. You know, marrying this ancient biblical use of plants with modern science is like so at the heart of who I am.
And it's very cool. And then where did it go from there?
So, you know, the cool thing about this business model, I have the best upline, Danette Goodyear, my sister, Michelle Skocek. They already had a system in place that was completely duplicable. And so all I had to do was look at successful people and go, okay, I'll do what they're doing, you know? And I think that that is so empowering for someone starting a business who, I've never taken a business class. I've never taken a marketing class. I've never taken a sales class. Like, I don't know business. And so to be able to invest $160 and suddenly you are a business owner and be able to look at a model that works and just do that, it's simple. You know, I really am super grateful to have those specific people as my upline and to be able to have seen what they were doing and that they were doing it in a way that really was congruent with who I was and my values. And so, you know, my sister blessed me a lot in this business, the way that we can structure our organization and we can place people with other sponsors. And so I really could let the motivator be helping people and giving them all the information and then letting them make the decision. And what I found, that may be counterintuitive, but from a business perspective, that's actually, it really works. It really works to like let people choose instead of, you know, and kind of having this like ownership-y attitude. And that really, people don't like that. Like, people don't like to feel like you own them. And so I think that some of the things that I did, again, that were just kind of value driven, actually were really smart for business.
I think a common theme in your business's culture is it's selfless. Mm-hmm. So it's about the individual, not about yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's about empowering, it's about supporting, it's about helping people. Mm-hmm. The money is one of those kind of byproducts that's great, but mm-hmm. if anything, it's perhaps the money that or the income that a family could make that is joining, but not so much about your own, right? And I think by, like you say, counterintuitively, by not focusing on yourself and focusing on others, it's brought so much more abundance back to you, mm-hmm. even though that wasn't really the point in the first place.
Right.
And I think, I mean, your business is certainly one of the most successful that we have in our organization and in our business. And I'd say there's a lot to that in that approach of being selfless and, like you say, not no high pressure, mm-hmm. whatever, just trying to help people. Mm-hmm. And sincerely going out, because I think that's a real motivator, a lot more than give, you know, I want to make $50.
Mm-hmm. Like, I need to listen to people and hear their needs and present solutions that actually solve their problems, not solutions that grow my business.
Where was Daryl in all of this? How did he feel about oils as you started to get more hippie? And what did he think as you started to hold classes and all of a sudden you're pretty busy, I'm sure, doing that?
Daryl was definitely the early adopter as far as belief in the product. Even when I was, you know, making a lot of fun of my sister, he would develop some specific, you know, wellness goal and he'd be like, call your sister and ask her what I should use. And I'd be like, you're crazy. But as far as the business, that's definitely been, you know, a major transition for our family. I think back to before Young Living and my entire existence was for the convenience of my husband and kids. Like, you know, you forgot your lunch today. Oh, let me bring it. I have nothing else to do, like, but to serve my husband and children, and absolutely felt super content in that role. Like loved that role of wife and stay-at-home mom. Loved being able to, you know, meet their needs and be available for them. And so as the business grew, he was always super supportive. He was always like, yes, go teach that class, meet with this person, do, you know, whatever. But it absolutely, there was some friction. You know, there was some conflict of, okay, now you don't just exist for our family. Like now there's an organization of people, hundreds of thousands of people who are looking to you for something, right? And that might be like coming to speak at an event. It might be sending you a text that you need to answer. But it's time consuming. There's a trade-off. Anything that you give your time to means you can't be giving your time to something else. We just kind of, you know, I hired a full-time assistant maybe 3 years ago. And that, you know, allowed me to give business things to someone else, things that somebody else can do. We hired help at home. And so, you know, a lot of young diamonds grew in the business, and all of us together over the course of 2 or 3 years, like husbands left their jobs. You know, it's interesting to see like these husbands and the journeys that they've been on since they've left their jobs. A lot of them hated their jobs. They were in some role that, you know, was sucking the life out of them. It was not physically healthy, whatever. Daryl loved his job. Like it was a calling, it was ministry. And so for us, that was a little bit different, but making that transition from a man, from working full-time to being at home, I tell people now, like, I don't care if you're 40 or if you're 90, do not retire without a plan. Like, plan what it is that you're going to do. Because for us, that was a major, major hurdle to overcome when he came home and neither of us knew, like, what are you supposed to be doing? You know? And it took us a while to figure that out. Like, it definitely, you know, I feel like he's always been my biggest supporter and he's always been my biggest cheerleader and, you know, pushing me. Also, there's a part of any husband that like wants their wife to just be available. And especially if they're just home, like, why are you not available? We, you know, managed our way through that and have kind of come out the other end of it and so much better than where we started. But I think for husbands, like, they've got to find their role. And their role, when I say that, like, it doesn't have to be in your Young Living business. It just has to be like in the world. What is their role in the world? And I think we're made as humans to contribute. And so I remember there being this almost like a pressure of like your husband has to be your business partner. and your husband, you know, needs to retire from their job and come work alongside you. And for us, that didn't work. You know, I'm a pretty strong-minded person, and we had to find another way for that to work. And so my husband speaks. He loves to speak at events. He's super passionate about the product. He has great relationship with you guys at corporate. He loves investing in that, you know, but he doesn't do the business the same way that I do the business. And so it's, I think it's important that husbands and wives find their way in that.
And I think that's not unusual, we've found, right? There's no one-size-fits-all solution for what your husband or partner would do when he or she retires. Mm-hmm. And you and Daryl have definitely found that, but mm-hmm. I also know it's been a journey and a challenge in many ways, as it is for most families.
Right, and I think, you know, we live in this world of social media where everything looks pretty.
Perfect.
And yep. Daryl and I have been pretty intentional about, like, just being authentic and saying, like, this is hard. Part of this is hard. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's valuable for people who are going through that transition and looking, you know, like they feel like I'm the only person who this is hard for. And you're not. Like, this is actually what we experience is super normal, you know, and I think we just need to talk about it. And I think the biggest thing that I hear when wives are starting out and they're like, my husband doesn't support me. And I'm like, that's not a Young Living thing. That's nothing to do with your business. There's a bigger problem there. And so, you know, it makes me feel good to know that, like, my husband always supported me. He always supported this. And even when it was inconvenient for him, and, you know, we fought about it for sure, but he supported me.
Yeah. And he's very supportive today. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you say, I feel like he's very much a part of our family, mm-hmm. our business.
We love
Daryl and love having mm-hmm. him around, even though he's a Kentucky fan. So were there times in your business that were hard? If you look back on your journey, what were some of the toughest spots?
Yeah, you know, I think just personal growth kind of things were probably the hardest for me as far as relationships. You know, people are messy. And if you work with people, like, they're going to be messes and there's going to be conflict and you're not going to agree with everyone about everything. And having come from this very perfectionistic mindset, wanting to please people all the time and keep the peace with everyone and not have any confrontation, like, that doesn't work when you're working with people. It works when you're working with kids, when you're just home with kids and you can just subdue them and tell them what to do. But with grownups, it doesn't work so much. And so I have grown a lot in this business just on a personal level and dealing with conflict and learning how to resolve conflict. And, you know, I think that what I've learned is if you can't make amends, if you can't apologize, if you can't forgive, if you can't overcome some relational hurdle with people, you'll die alone. Because every person in your life is going to disappoint you at some point. Like, I am a big ball of disappointment. Like, I disappoint people every day. Every day I let people down. And I have to be big enough to own that and apologize and say, hey, I dropped that ball. I made that mistake. You know, I screwed that up. I lost my temper, whatever. And smooth that over and reconcile and fix that relationship. You know, and so I think one of the most important things that I've learned is that, and actually see that play out in life. You know, I have an assistant that works next to me for the last 3 years, and we conflict sometimes. But to know, like, to feel super confident now that when I'm irritating her or she's irritating me, that it's going to be okay. Like, we're going to work this out. We're going to talk about it at some point. We're going to, you know, I'm going to apologize, whatever. That's really reassuring, and it's really a secure place to be relationally, to know that you can do that with people.
Yeah, I can only imagine with the size of the organization and the amount of leadership you are, that role you're kind of thrust into, there would be a lot of learning along the way. But I think none of us come with all the answers for leadership, right? Mm-hmm. And when you look at our business, as much as it is a business, it's also a personal development course. Mm-hmm. It's going to teach you, refine you, try you. And it's not always going to be pretty, to mm-hmm. your point. It's not always going to be perfect. But I think the fact that you, as you tell your story, you were just willing to do. Mm-hmm. You're willing to have conversations. You're willing to get started. You're willing to roll up your sleeves and sometimes make a mistake. But but keep going and keep trying to get better and improve, mm-hmm. you know, along the way. And now you look at the business you have and the ways that I'm sure you've seen your own personal growth and in your team and in your family. I'm sure that's really gratifying to look back on and see that. We get so focused on our own goals and goal setting, and I think that's really important. But what you're saying is a bit counterintuitive in that it's not about you, right? It's about mm-hmm. the people you're working with. I think Zig Ziglar said it best when he said, if you help enough people get what they want, you'll get what you want.
Right.
And you've done that in a really profound way where it has never really been about you. And I kind of touched on earlier, I really admire the way you and your team, I think April, Danette, Michelle, all of you are like this. You give a lot and you're abundant. And the way that you use your prosperity through our business, I think is really inspiring. It inspires me. Mm-hmm. And I know you're very private about it, so I don't want to push you to say anything more than you're comfortable, but could you talk just about that in general,
yeah.
your attitude towards it and what you're comfortable sharing?
You know, I think that at some point you have enough, right? Like your bills are paid, you take care of your responsibilities, but at some point you have enough. And you know, Mary Young has said often, like, a lot of money in the hands of good people can do a lot of good in the world. And start thinking beyond yourself, you know. And you can give time, you can give effort, action. You know, if there's no money, you can give. We just always felt like the faithful in the little things. And I remember kind of having this epiphany of, like, what I'm doing is the dream that I had in my heart as a little girl. It's not a medical practice. There's no 24-hour call. There's no office I have to go to. And I'm absolutely not practicing medicine. I am not prescribing, but I am empowering people with information that's changing their health in a way that I didn't even know was possible. Realizing that, and realizing that, like, this thing that I gave up, you know, I handed this dream to God, and that He wrapped it up in a package with a bow on it called Young Living and gave it back, has been super fulfilling. Just super fulfilling to realize, like, this is that. When I was able to verbalize what it was that I wanted to do, I didn't know what network marketing does. You know, I didn't know the power of this business. I didn't know what essential oils were. To realize that, like, this is the venue that's fulfilling that dream of being able to help people and really equip people with their health has been amazing.
It's kind of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing you.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Drop of Inspiration. We really love when Chief Sales Officer Ben Riley comes in to guest host, and we love it even more when he brings friends in like Royal Crown Diamond Jen Jordan. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Drop of Inspiration on your favorite podcasting platform to hear stories from all over the Young Living community. Thanks for listening.